Welcome to today's episode of Slight Edge Advantage. I'm Jeremy Torski, your host, and what is it that you're doing or not doing that's keeping you from what you want in life? Are you reading as much as you can? Are you finding out about your competition, everything about your product? These are the things that give you the slight edge advantage, but more, it's turning your motivation, your whys, into your drive. That's when really your slight edge advantage really takes over. When you could just pop out of bed every morning because your purpose is so clear, that gives you an amazing advantage to catch up to the competition, whether it's a mentor doing what you want or maybe somebody who is in a different department or a different company that you're chasing. Imagine the things you could do with clarity of purpose. And today's guest has got that in spades. It's Congressman, Chris Eddy. He's running for the 2024 congressional seat in District 25 in Florida, right where I was born, South Broward County. He spent 30 years in the Air Force, retiring as a Brigadier General in 2017. He spent 13 years as an FBI agent, and he was in the intelligence manager for 17 years, previous Federal Civil Service, retiring in 2019. He built the FBI's number one rated intelligence program, and that's out of 56 programs. Currently, he's the Weston City Commissioner. He's a commissioner in the city of Weston. And in 2020, he won that position with the largest number of votes in that city's history. So we'd like to welcome to this show my guest, Congressional Hopeful, Mr. Chris Eddy.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Slight Edge Advantage.
Thanks for the invite.
So one of your biggest thing is you're running on three platforms, and we'll just kind of start with what you stand for, and then we'll talk about how you came to those and why. But number one is civility. Number two is financial or fiscal responsibility. Number three is security.
Right.
Why are these things so important to you? Out of all the things that you could have picked, why are those important? And then I'd like to come back after that and kind of start through your history of where you came from. But those really are your defining principles right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'll clarify one thing. I wasn't an agent, special agent. They have arrest powers, and my wife is a retired special agent. So if I don't clarify that I was a professional staff and led the intelligence program. But, you know, I don't know if you see a lot of these politicians on TV over the years, and you look and you say, you know, is this the best we can do? As a country, is this the best that we can find out there? So it got me a little frustrated over the years, watching them bicker back and forth and not much getting done. So the same reasons I ran for city commissioner 3 years ago, you just get mad. And I had middle school kids at the time, and they would say, you know, Dad, quit complaining and do something about it.
Wow.
So they use that same dad logic that we use on them. Right,
they're quick learners around
on me. So we, my wife and I went down to complain about issues during COVID to the city commissioner. A lot of things didn't make sense. And she said, well, you should run for office. And I said, no, we don't do that. We're lifetime independent. Other people run for office.
Wow.
Not us. But then she said, wouldn't you rather be the one making decisions for your family rather than someone else?
Yeah.
So that got me started. And the same thing for the national race. You just get frustrated after a while. You know, who's doing anything about this? And you look around, you see no other options other than to dive in. And I didn't want to wake up 20 years from now saying, should have, could have.
Right.
So civility was the easiest thing that came to my mind, that you could disagree with people on issues, but you don't have to call them un-American. You don't have to call them names or yell at them or go on TV or lie about them. Mm. I think that's what most Americans want as we work around the district. We're seeing that's resonating a lot. People want a return to normalcy in the country and a return to civility.
In many ways, that's more important, I think, than any other, because with civility and discord, you can meet people halfway with all of these other issues that are present in everyday's life. No matter what era we're in, there's always going to be issues. But in the past, it seemed like, especially with our politicians, it seemed like there were a lot more common ground items. And then the ones you disagreed on, you kind of tried it, or you kind of throw down the Trump card and you went to the votes and the votes got it. But These days, everything is.
Yeah, it seems like everything's a crisis. And if you don't agree with them, you're an extremist on either side. And this is both sides.
Absolutely.
Both sides have their extremists that seem to get all the television time. And you look at it, you go, man, there's something needs to change and quickly. When 74% of the country thinks that we're heading in the wrong direction, that's both parties. So that's a dangerous position for a country to be in. And you talk about civility, you know, in the business world, you have to work with people you disagree with.
Yeah.
And you have to, even your competitors, you're not out there name calling with your competitors. You're trying to outwork them. And that's what we're doing
outwork,
in our campaign.
Yeah. I always say nobody outworks the kid. It's one of my things on stage. Nobody outworks the kid. However, you know, we had a discussion. I met you at a friend's house during a little meet and greet. Joel Gondera, shout out to 31 Days to Become a Better Man, author Joel Gondera. But we said, you know, outworking, working itself is important, but working smart, working with leverage, really figuring out what to work for and with that pointed clarity is important. So number two on your list was fiscal responsibility. And man, we are at numbers these days that the world's never seen, at least I don't think the world anywhere has ever seen, the United States has never seen this much debt. And so what do you feel about that? And what do you think could be done about it?
We have to, you know, the easiest thing to do is spend money to try to solve a problem. You know, businesses don't have that luxury where they could just keep spending and spending. They have to work smarter. Sometimes they have to cut back, you know, when the economy's not doing well. In the city of Weston, we've been able to have a balanced budget and not raise taxes the last 6 years or business taxes. Obviously, the state of Florida has to balance their budget, as do other states. It's only the federal government where they say, well, there's a problem. Let's throw another $100 billion at it. And we're, you know, the interest on the debt, just the interest, is $400 billion a year. And that's much more than we spend on our veterans program. So
that's a shame.
It takes a huge chunk of our increasing chunk each year of our income just to pay off the debt. Not unlike you do it at your house, you know, sooner or later you become over leveraged. And I think you could look at simple solutions. For example, last year, the country spent $400 million on border security, not for our own country, but for the Middle East. We spent $400 million to help Middle East nations improve their border security. And I think they could do pretty well on their own, especially when you see the senior citizens hurting down here. Yeah. We could certainly do more for Medicare, Medicare Advantage. And the country seems to be worried, or the government anyway, seems to be worried more about student loan payments and Social Security payments. And that tells us that our focus is in the wrong direction. We need to look after our most vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
You know, where $100, $200 a month is decisive for them. We were at an event at Century Village down here, and the HOA, the Homeowner Association, wanted to raise the association fees $100 to $200 a month.
Wow.
Because of inflation and other reasons. And there was a mini riot.
Walkers flying everywhere.
That's a lot of money. And women were crying and saying, I'm going to have to move over $100 a month or get into a reverse.
But when you're in a fixed income, there is no way to get that $100
extra. So we talk about inflation. You talk about 7%, 8%, 2%, 3%, that cumulative effect. And I hear it from my wife every time she comes back from Costco.
Right.
Everything goes
up.
Oh,
I do too.
Over the years, it's, oh, this used to be $2. Now it's $4.
And there's less of it.
And it's less, and it's not going back. You know, the price is not going back. And tellingly, this just came out. In the last 2 years, it cost the average person $700 more a month for the same goods and services they bought 2 years ago. So $8,500 a month, a year, got taken out of your pocket. I would ask, did your salary go up that much? Did your minimum wage go up that much? No. So you just took an $8,500 haircut because of that inflation, and you're stuck. And that's what I think people are noticing when they say the country's heading in the wrong direction. They can't buy what they used to buy. They can't afford to go on a vacation. They have to work multiple jobs. I just met a waitress just the other night, and she was near tears. She goes, my rent went up $400 a month, and now I have to get a second job. I had to move from a two-bedroom to a one-bedroom. I'm sleeping in my daughter's bedroom now. We're sharing a bedroom with a teenage daughter, and she has to work two jobs just to make for what she did in one job.
And that's got a long-term effect because now the kids have one less parent, or for her, in her case, if she's a single mother, then no parents. And so now who's influenced the daughter? Who's influencing the child's choices? What are they watching? What are they listening to? And it's a downward slide there, and one that we've been in for 70 years, you know, since we started this whole experiment with social services. And I believe, not to get too down a rabbit hole with conspiracies, but literally taking the men out of the homes of Black communities to make Black women dependent on the Democratic Party, which was systematic. And that's still in effect today. I see it. I produce podcasts and I have different shows on. That's a real thing.
Right. My friend likes to call it fatherlessness, right? Without a strong father or a two-parent family, it's very difficult. It's not impossible. There's obviously successful people that can do it, but it takes Herculean efforts. And what is the government doing to help encourage that two-person family? And the fact that it doesn't take two people to make the same money that you used to as one person to afford, you know, the necessities in life. And necessities in life certainly have changed. You certainly need Wi-Fi at home now because of the students and the schools.
Right?
You need high-speed internet. You need a laptop or a tablet or something. It's, you know, we're still doing far and away above than any other country on the planet, but we certainly could do better.
Well, and especially when they keep changing the rules, you know, you have to work more to make the same, even though money's going up. And the school system says, let's change the rules where our kids go to school and how they go to school and when they go to school. So we're going to go ahead and do that. And it doesn't matter for the parents to have to give them time to figure it out. How do they get transportation?
Sure.
How do they get them up? How do they leave them a third grader, second grader alone on Friday because they go to a 4-week school? It's really something. I always did like though, in support of the year round school, because summer camp was so much money.
Yeah.
I said, if we can get rid of that summer camp, I'd save a lot of money.
Well, I'm the grandson of immigrants from Lebanon.
So second generation.
Yeah, second generation. And one thing any immigrant family will tell you is the value of work ethic. So in our family, if you didn't have a job by the time you were 10 years old, you were a slacker. You know, it could have been delivering papers, selling Christmas cards, seeds door to door, or shoveling sidewalks.
It's contributing.
Whatever it takes, right, to learn how to have that work ethic.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has gone by the wayside for different reasons.
Because but you saw it, too. Everyone in the house was doing it.
Everybody worked, and your parents worked, and your grandparents worked all night just to provide for your family. I had the pleasure of visiting a business in Pembroke Pines that trains future diesel mechanics and car mechanics.
That's a trade. So that's what we need.
Talk about school, that not everybody needs to go to college. You could go to this one-year place and get the skills you need and make $50,000, $60,000 right out of there without incurring $200,000 in college debt.
Some chances of upward mobility.
For sure.
Yeah. And built-in lifetime security. Robots are never going to be able to fix and identify and run a mechanic shop like the mechanic. I mean...
Right, and you need skills to do that. They're all computerized now.
Especially when they have planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're always upgrading and fixing and these things. And diesel is the backbone of the country. And I don't see that going away. Even with electric trucks, with the loads that they have in the mountains out in the West and everything, I just don't see electric 18-wheelers, not in a couple of lifetimes, maybe 100 years from now.
Yeah, I have a 14-year-old daughter today, her birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thanks. She's enjoying school on her birthday. No days off.
Good.
And I told her, you know, the business to get into is fixing robots and fixing Teslas.
Yes.
Because there's a huge demand for that. And, you know, supply and demand, you can make a very good income. My nephew happens to drive a long-haul 18-wheeler, which is also very lucrative. So college is not for everybody. Certainly was for me. I enjoyed it and prospered as an ROTC a student out of there. My dad was a mechanic, though, and that just didn't transfer down to me.
Right.
Those mechanical skills I lacked and still lack today. But again, it's very difficult to be a garage mechanic nowadays with all the electronics in vehicles.
Yeah, I built, rebuilt 1979 Monte Carlo or Buick Regal, one of those. My friends and I used to trade cars and motorcycles a lot. So I think it was Monte Carlo. I rebuilt the engine, and I think this is the last time I put a wrench on a car.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't be able to do that to 2019.
No, Chevy, no. And I'm afraid even to change the oil in my Jeep because of all the sensors and everything. I just it could drive into the quick oil change to $49 or $89. 20 minutes, you're out.
Yeah.
And it's done. I got better things to do in life besides change my oil on my Jeep.
Right. But that just shows you, you know, you mentioned college and the college debt that, you know, that's not for everybody.
If we don't do something about it, there won't be debt for any college people because they keep forgiving. They're going to, right?
Well, as soon as the federal government got involved in the student loan business, I knew what was happening. Anybody that with foresight could see that they're going to pick winners and losers. So anytime the government owns anything, you might be on the winning side of that and be happy, or on the losing side.
You have no say. To which side you're going to be on because it's not no rhyme or reason to it.
And there's no risk. If you want to study early American Indian architecture, you know, and you can't seem to pay off your $200,000 in loans, there's no risk for you if you say, well, I'll just hang out and the government and eventually will come around.
Yeah, and you got people, my family, we started when the kids were born, started the prepaid college stuff. If they go to college, it's there. If they don't go to college or they get a scholarship and they don't go to college, go to trade school, they get the money. If they don't go to college because they just don't want to go, then dad gets a Harley. That was always the plan.
Well, my son this year said, Dad, he's a senior in high school, says, Dad, I think I want to go to college for business. I said, I'm not helping you pay for a business degree. They're so generic. Go out and start a business. Take some courses on the side and figure it out.
I do encourage... Most people won't believe this. I do encourage college for anybody who wants to go in business for only in one way. First of all, 2-year associates. Take everything business related. Don't get your degree. Just go for the 2-year, you know, plan. Business math, business writing, statistics, accounting, public speaking, especially that's a good one, says the professional speaker. But a couple things happen there. A, you get to learn to learn. That's where you don't do that in college or high school.
Right.
You're forced to be there. Secondly, especially go at night. So building your business and going at night. So now you're going to go for 4 years instead of 2 years. But you're going to be there with adults who you see struggling and trying to change their life for the better. And you start to make these relationships and connections. And then you also start to see from that perspective, the teachers, how they're trying to, they don't try to push you or mold you as much at nighttime with the older adults. So you're more safe haven and community, university.
Yeah.
For my two cents.
Well, that's very similar to what I told them. Is that, you know, go to specialize. So go to business statistics or finance.
Yeah, yeah, sir. Exactly.
Right? So now he's leaning more towards finance, got a great internship with a wealth advisor and learning practical.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, practical skills.
Internship, unpaid?
In high schools. Well, you get 10 bucks an hour or whatever.
Okay.
They got something, but.
Gives him gas money.
He knows to invest his money. And both our kids, you know, are great.
That's kind of important.
Investing their money. And putting that away.
Learning those lessons.
And we talk about school. One interesting stat that I came across in the last 60 years in this country, one of my objectives would be to reduce that administrative burden on these school districts and use that money for more pay for teachers, but also more mental health counselors in school. Ooh, it is a crisis. You know, I know a lot of family mental health counselors in West End surrounding communities, and I ask them all the time, and they said, you know, we're fully booked. So it's good in a way that they're getting those resources, but it's bad in a way that service is even needed. So it's definitely needed more in the schools.
Well, Steve, what I do like about our mental health situation these days is there's a lot less stigma related with mental health issues. If you're dyslexic, ADHD, even bipolar, a lot of these things that used to be shameful are now, you just say it. You know, I'm on this sort of medication or that sort of medication. HIPAA aside, I'm talking about self, you know, divulging of your mental health issues. Because, boy, there are very few people who are just born perfect and walk around with no mental health issues. Even if it's just stress, anxiety, obsession, compulsive disorder, which I call CDO because the letters are in the right order. But they're just, there's less stigma with them. So there's more reason now to really talk about it and support it, because really everyone's okay with saying, I have it and I need, I would do better with help. And they understand that. Do you happen to know this statistic? When we had great border, you know, defense, where was our country in allowing people to come in legally compared to other countries? We were probably pretty high, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure.
On top of that.
There are certainly humanitarian visas that
and we political
grant and allow certain political
financial
asylums. The Remain in Mexico policy was working under President Trump, where if you claimed asylum, then you had to wait until you're hearing it in another country. The current administration has expanded the use of asylum. So if you feel like you are an economic asylee, for example, okay, that might be enough. Or if you feel like your life is in danger in Central America because you identify as LGBTQ and you feel some violence might come to you, that is grounds for asylum. So you essentially open the door to anybody that can claim
that. But at least they come in through a process.
You would like to think, but really they just come into the border and say, I'm claiming this status and I feel threatened in my home. Okay, here's your asylum ticket. We'll see you in 7 years, when your hearing comes.
That's how it is now.
That's how it
is now. But in the past, you could do it. Well,
in the past, you had to remain in Mexico
and wait for
had an orderly process.
Yes.
Now, look, our immigration system certainly needs an overhaul, and the last few presidents have tried it and had no luck doing it.
Canada, I think the last couple of presidents had split House and Congress, too.
It takes some wherewithal to do it. Canada has a merit-based system to do that. Yeah. There's certainly a lot of logic in that. We certainly should allow humanitarian from certain countries to come in. We've always had that as a country because we are a forgiving and loving country. But there doesn't seem to be any order or process to it now.
Nope. And so now we've passed migrated through your principles, and I think that you said 77%. I think most people would agree, more than 77%, that there's validity in all of those principles, that we should live by those. You seems like you give most of your life to civil service, to this country. You retire, giving your whole life to it. Why go back into it? I mean, how come is this much of an issue? I mean, someone says you can't complain about it unless you do something. You say, I was part of the system for many years, your whole career, and you did your part.
Right.
So you deserve to really ride off in the sunsets now. But is that pushing? Is it your children's future? Is it just a patriotic calling?
It's probably all of the above.
Yeah.
Because, again, as I mentioned, you look at it and you say, is this the best we have in our country?
Speaking of the best we have, I'm not saying it's the best we have, but she's definitely one of the most fierce we have, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is who you're facing.
Right.
It's like a David and Goliath, literally. She was trained by Hillary Clinton. She's backed by the Democratic machine.
Sure.
And I don't, when's the last time a Republican won in your district?
Probably never. They redistrict every 10 years, obviously. And they redistricted now, and I'm a numbers guy. I've been an analyst.
I found that out recently.
So I got a couple masters, a PhD in leadership. So I don't do things for self promotion. Certainly, I don't need more titles, more job titles. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it was winnable.
Right.
And so 2 years,
not only winnable, but to just face the fight for the next 18 months in the war that you have to wage, and the personal stress that you're going to put on you and your family. You really believe in this?
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't winnable and if it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Fun's a big part of my life. when we're out door knocking, talking to businesses, we make sure we have fun. And certainly it looks tough because it used to be a 48% Democrat seat. Now it's only 42% Democrat seat. So it is winnable. You just have to convince a small percentage of Democrats come to your side that are looking for a change, looking for something positive.
Right.
And these jobs, honestly, should not be lifetime jobs. You see people that are 80, 90 years old in there. Hand it on to the next generation. I'm certainly not going to be in there for 20 or 30 years. I don't need it.
I was going to ask you. I was going to hold you to that.
I don't need it for the titles. I think what happens to a lot of people is they get up there and they start representing the Washington district instead of their own district. And I think they like the titles. They like being catered to, having their pictures taken.
Yeah.
And you know, you stay up there one more term, maybe I can get on a committee.
It's enticing.
I don't need all that. And no. I guarantee you the Republicans are going to hate me almost as much as the Democrats when I'm in there, because I'm going to vote no on their wasteful spending. Anything that doesn't improve things in our district in Florida 25, that's who I'm here to represent. I'm not here to represent the Republican Party when I get elected. I'm here to represent the residents of our district. 42% are Democrat, and the rest are independent Republicans. So we're here to represent 100% of our population, not just a segment of it.
I believe that. You know, when I talk to people growing up the way I did, you get a good read on people. And I believe that about you. So how is this impacting the family? Are they totally behind you? Are they involved?
No, my wife is out every day. Yes. We're all door knocking. High school kids are high school kids, you know, but they're not embarrassed by their dad, which is nice, because I also speak at their schools on occasion as a city commissioner. So we're all in it 100%. We realize that, you know, there needs to be some change, and if it's not going to be us, who is it going to be? And we're not going to out fundraise. You know, the Democrat Party, that's for sure.
So speaking of that real quick, I don't want to cut you off because I've got your information on there. So wherever you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube around the country, if you want to support somebody to really make a change in Congress and really take out somebody who's been really a poison pill, this is the information to help you help your campaign. I'm going to leave it on the screen for a few minutes here because I really think that all politics are local. But this is going to be a national push.
This would be national news.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz beating her,
right,
and becoming a Democrat in that district. Right. I'm gonna leave this up in this view for a few minutes.
I'd like to talk about the money a little bit, because this is a big part of politics, and we are putting a lot of our own resources into it, because I would never ask anybody to do something that we wouldn't do ourselves. And we might be out fundraised, but we're not going to be outworked. And we're out there 12.
I've met some of your staff. Yeah. I've met some of your staff, and they're very smart, and they are eclectic too, right? Yeah. You've got a different,
for sure. From and I'm proud to say we got elected Democrats supporting us in Broward County, although they won't obviously come public with that. But the whisper campaign is equally important. You know, Jimmy, a couple of things I learned in the money game was to get on the ballot is $10,000. So I'm a fiscal discipline. I said, well, what other ways? They said, well, you can get 5,000 signatures. So we're out there every day getting signatures. We just passed 2,000 signatures already. So we'll make that in plenty of time. And that saves the campaign 10,000. I also learned that a lot of other campaigns put their kids on the payroll or their family members on the payroll. And they'll say, well, my kid's handing out flyers, so I'm going to pay him 1,000 a month.
Oh.
So these are campaign donations coming in from across the country. Your donations that you're sending in $25 hoping to get some candidate elected, and what's it going to? It's going to their kids or to pay their rent or to buy them clothes associated with a campaign or to take a trip to Washington to get their picture taken with a politician. Wow. We don't do any of that. My kids have their own lives and their own jobs, so they'll be fine. We don't use the money for unnecessary travel. Every dollar that we get is going to get out the vote and to get more people on our team. We don't waste it.
So if you're in Broward County or anywhere in the South Florida area, and I'm going to put the information back up here again just for everyone, what's a way that we can support this run for you?
So social media is huge nowadays, but if you go to Eddie for Congress with the number 4, on there, you could click on volunteer, and then our team will get right back with you. And some people are comfortable talking to their friends. Some people are comfortable door knocking or making phone calls. Others will say, hey, you know, I'll be your graphic artist. And a great story about our guy who does all of our graphic arts. When he became a U.S. citizen a couple years ago, I hand wrote him a note as a city commissioner congratulating him. And he always remembered that. So when he found out I was running for Congress, he goes, you know, I want to do this for you. So he does it as an in-kind donation for all of our graphic arts now. And that's the same story we get throughout our campaign. People wanting to give back and not have their hand out, but to help us help others. So Eddie for Congress, you could volunteer. What we find is extremely popular is people are doing meet and greets, like you attended at Joel's house, where they invite anywhere from 5 to 50 friends and neighbors over. And it's a little bit of a fundraising, but it's more just to hear from me, and so I can get a sense of the community, what their big issues are. And then that just kind of builds. So we do 2 or 3 of those a week now in people's homes at nights, in addition to all the other networking events that we go to as well. So we're a big believer in getting out, being visible, and being in front of this campaign. We're not going to run this campaign from behind a TV camera or through right. mailers. We are out in people's community.
Yeah, you got your outside shoes on.
Yes.
Yeah. So Eddie, E-D-D-Y, number four, Congress, and that's for Facebook and Instagram. LinkedIn is Chris, C-H-R-I-S-E-D-D-Y, for the audio folks who are listening to this. Twitter, at Eddie for Congress, E-D-D-Y, number four, Congress. And then your phone number is 954-651-5161. Pretty bold. Does that go to you?
Yeah, it goes to me. It's in my pocket right now. It's amazing when people come at, and ask questions on Facebook. They, I'm sure your handlers won't get this right. to you. And it's me responding. That's what people want in their government. They want responsive leadership, somebody who's there to answer their concerns. And listen, as a commissioner, we say no a lot. When people may want something, it's just not in the cards. But they really appreciate that you're taking the time to get back to them. And it doesn't just go to some staffer. Somewhere. So after I'm elected, we're going to continue to do the outreach to the churches, business communities that we have. I'm excited to announce that we have a new economic and small business advisor coming on the team. So that will be announced next month and help us with the small business community as well.
Well, let us know when that is. This is going to get released probably in a few weeks, but we can go back in there and do some stuff to put any contact information, any big announcements. We'll come back and retro this video because it's 18 months, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood.
I got a primary to run against an opponent who's ran four other times, obviously hasn't won, and that is next August 20th. And then, obviously, the general election's in November of 2024.
Well, anything we can do to help this albatross. We need to get some change in Broward County. I was born there. Spent the first half of my life there. Many friends and family still live there. And just even on the country, it's a blight, which is in there now. That's Jeremy Torres saying that. That's not. He's so positive. And I just know though.
One thing I'm encouraged about is the number of independents and Democrats coming to our side. Because of one thing or another, they're not happy either with my opponent or they're not happy with the way things are in Washington. So to say, we need fresh thoughts and fresh voices in there as well and some new ideas because obviously what we have is not working. When you get the level of debt that we have, the level of insecurity that people have personally and also through some inner cities that we have with the crime problem, people aren't feeling comfortable about America's future or America's standing in the world. We certainly have lost our leadership banner in some aspects of the world.
And it was one thing years ago when we were, quote-unquote, a joke. It was one thing in time when we were considered egotistical or superior. We are unsafe right now. We're considered weak. Which is the worst thing you could be considered on the world stage,
right?
And it doesn't hurt us as much as it hurts the rest of the world. Because good luck coming here. You might think we're weak. You'll find out very quickly what we have. But what they're doing is they're advancing in other places and doing other things in the world where we can't be to protect those places where in the past our strength protected things in a way that was. Yeah.
And that's especially true of China. I teach as an adjunct professor at Florida International University, and I teach national security and foreign policy and worked at U.S. Southern Command. So I'm certainly aware of China's encroachment within Latin America to secure the mineral rights and precious metal rights for down there in exchange for Chinese money and Chinese influence in the region. So they're right on our back door. Obviously, they're stealing our secrets still.
Oh, both
left and right.
Blatantly.
Blatantly.
Are they in Cuba right now?
They've been there for a while in Cuba. And, when they hacked into our Office of Personnel Management database, they stole my personal information along with millions of others. So not only just my fingerprints and my financial data, but when you fill out your background report, you have to list all your relatives, all their addresses, all their data as well. So they have all of that. So if I ever were to go to China, which I'm not, they already have that dossier built on all of us from that information. If you look at their military aircraft, their space shuttle, their mirror images of ours.
Oh, so I wonder how that happened.
Trillions of dollars in
reverse engineering. I will give them that their children are being schooled a lot better. No, they're indoctrinated. I'm not saying that, but we have to get better at teaching kids tech.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah, it's a technical world. Yeah. But, you know, you say that, and we still have the best universities. All the Chinese students tend to come here. What we need to do is keep the best and brightest of the Chinese students when they do come here to stay here and help our economy and eventually have them become U.S. citizens. And I have a lot of Chinese friends that want to do that and have done that and realize that this is more of an opportunity here. You know, China's not the 800-pound gorilla that people make it out to be, and that's a whole other show.
No, that's North Korea. Well. No, I'm just kidding.
So, yeah, I'm pretty well-versed in foreign policy, but when I go around and talk to the residents of Broward County and specifically my district, they're concerned about inflation.
Their
homeowner prices going up from insurance and things at the grocery store and the craziness that seems to be going on in the world. They're what they're teaching kids in school and what they're not.
So control the controllables.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now.
Yeah, exactly. And just like as a business person, right?
Yeah.
There's some things that are outside of your control. In my campaign, I can't control a lot of things. Presidential nominee, if it rains on election day, all of that. But we are going to control the controllables.
You can do the door knocking. You could do these shows here. Get in touch with Chris Eddy. I encourage you to support for this run for Congress. It's never been more important to turn these areas, because they don't have our best interest at heart. They really don't. And all politics are local. So when you go to the U.S. level, you're still having an impact on the local lives here. So I really encourage you. Any closing words?
I just wanted people to focus on what's important in their lives. So if civility, fiscal discipline, and security are important in your lives, they're important in our lives. And that's what our campaign is focused on. So if that resonates with you, I would just ask that you reach out to our website and join our growing team. You know, I'm very humble and appreciative of all the support that we've gotten. We're the first Republican candidacy in memory, probably in history in Broward County, to have a super PAC as well.
Oh, that's great.
Helping us, and just because a lot of businesses.
So that means business owners in Broward County or anywhere in the country.
Anywhere.
Can go and give to that super PAC.
That's correct.
And that will directly benefit you.
Right, because in federal elections, it's only individuals can donate to the campaign up to $6,600 for the primary and the general. And, you know, again, we're not going to out fundraise.
No,
but we're watching the show. I'm appreciative of the people that have started the super PAC, and it's grown certainly.
How do they find that?
Started. It'll be on my website, but it's unitedforcommonsense.org. And as a candidate, I'm really hands off on that.
Yes.
But it's encouraging to see that other people want change as well. And it's very encouraging seeing my family, not just my immediate family in my house, but relatives and everybody else, and my college friends reaching out and say, you know what, we know you can do this, and we're behind you.
Because it's going to take it all.
That's right.
It's going to take every single part of this machine to get you across that finish line. It's going to take every day to do it. I hope you got the stamina.
No days off.
No, I think you do have it.
That's our motto, is no days off. We know we only have a certain number of days, certain number of hours, and how many votes we need to earn per day. Again, I'm an analyst with numbers. We know what targets we need to hit.
And then when you win, guess what? Then it really just begins.
That's right. Yeah. I don't even think I'll take the next day off. We get right at it, forming our team and opening up our offices to serve the district.
Well, I think we've said it all. I think we could have you back again leading up to the primary. Try to get a big push there. We'd love to see you back here in the studio.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming. It means a lot to me.
Thanks.
Especially my first political interview, so to speak. So I hope I made everybody happy with the opinions expressed here or on my side, all mine. And I do welcome anybody who wants to voice their political opinion or running for this seat. You're welcome here. This is an open door policy here. And we'd love to hear from all sides. But I personally cannot agree more with this person sitting to my left here, Chris Eddy. And I encourage you to do everything you can to support him and everything he's trying to do for this area where I was born and raised, but also this country. I'm Jeremy Torsk. What's your slide edge advantage? Comment below. Let us know what makes you, you. And we'll see you again soon.